time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Andrew brings us our quick tip of the week. He says, a few weeks ago, I shared about the ability in Apple Reminders to group lists into categories or folders with names of your choosing. Apple Notes, with lots of notes, can be pretty unwieldy. Yes, you can have folders for notes, but lots of different topics or folders, too, can become a jungle. Did you know? You can also group folders of notes into categories or folders with a name of your choosing. Just create a new folder and give it a name, and then drag other existing folders into it, and they will become subfolders. Better still, call these top-level folders with the same names as the folders for your lists that you have in Reminders, so your brain has to do less work ongoing when organizing both Notes and Reminders. That's a really good idea. More tips. Thank you, Andrew. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1082 for Monday, March 24th, National Cocktail Day 2025. Geek Gab, the show where you send in tips like that, you send in cool stuff found, you send in questions, we share it all, we try to provide answers to the questions, or at least a troubleshooting path, and we organize it all into an agenda that generally is built to help each of us learn at least five new things every single time we get together. Sponsor for this episode is OWC with their new Thunderbolt 5 portable SSD, the Envoy Ultra, over 6,000 megabytes a second. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. For now, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And we don't have Pilot Pete today, Adam. No Pete. He is piloting. Finally, for the first time in a while, he's able to fly his plane that Pete and I dropped off to get painted after MacStock. Today is the day we're recording it, I believe, is the first day he has seen it, let alone flown it since then. So, you know, I can't wait to see pictures of the paint job, which I'm sure he'll share with all of us. So.
Hopefully it all will get put back together okay.
Let's hope. Yeah, I think he told us this morning he was putting the wingtips on and was going to fly it for its annual inspection. So
he went with a mechanic though, right?
Oh, yeah.
He had to do an inspection and all that good stuff. Yeah.
No, he's in good hands down there, but yes. Yep. It's a fun little plane. I like that thing. Hopefully it, I can't wait till it's back in New Hampshire.
Neat.
Yeah. All right. Shall we get into some tips
or do we do it? Oh, we didn't do our police code.
Oh,
reserve lodging 1082. Reserve lodging.
I don't even know what
this is. More like a vacation thing.
I know. I guess police have to take vacation too, so that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, I mean, we all take vacations just because the police officers. It's weird to have a code for it. I'm sure it means something else. If you know, feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Tell us.
Yeah, you can hit feedback at MacGeekGab.com. I wonder if it's like, you know, Mayberry, where the drunk would just come up, he has reserved lodging at the jail cell and just put himself in. Right?
Denny. But wasn't his name? What was the name of the town
I
drunk?
I don't remember. I didn't watch that show too much.
Otis.
Right?
Otis was the town drunk.
Nice little table. Otis, yeah.
Otis.
He'd just like wander in. Hey.
Yep.
All right.
Well, it is National
Cocktail
Day.
I'll take care of myself.
Yeah, I got it myself.
Yeah,
I'll just lock myself in. Yeah. I said Denny because our neighbor in the house that I was in for a large part of growing up, like middle school, high school, and college, our neighbor, everybody in our little village called, like that had lived there far longer than us, called him Otis. Ooh. Because he was the town drunk and everybody knew him as that. So it's funny that I went to Denny as the name from Mayberry,
funny.
Not Otis. Yeah, it's not really that funny, but you know.
All right. Now we can get into some tips.
Yeah, feedback.
I got
MacGeekGab.com is where Todd sent that to.
All right. So you said feedback at MacGeekGab.com. We'll just do that one more time.
One more time.
Todd says, Todd says, when your iPhone is locked and you use Siri to create a reminder, the result will show on the home screen. You can tap the result and edit it prior to committing it. So you can actually edit the entry on the lock screen before it actually gets saved, apparently. So
you need
to add to it, append it, adjust it. Yeah, I seem to remember you can kind of do that with some other things too, but I'm not 100% sure.
You're probably right. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of,
I remember being able to, there was something about being able to edit, like if you ask the S lady a question, right, and it pops up and then you've got that dialogue that you can tap it and sort of edit it if the phrase that you said was misinterpreted or didn't get exactly correctly.
Yeah.
And then you could get the result that way as well.
Huh.
I've never done it though, but I think you can do it.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. Speaking of the lock screen, the episode of Gig Gab that comes out today is with my friend, Josh Rosenberg. And he, wanted to use his iPhone as his, you know, as his camera. He's like, oh, my web camera is kind of crappy. He's like, tell me what to buy. I'll just go buy a better web camera. I'm like, you've got one in your pocket, man. Like you don't have to buy something. And he's like, oh, really? How do I do that? I'm like, you just select it. Like it's there. Like you have to turn off continuity camera if you don't want it to work. And you can go into, settings, and I think it's AirPlay and continuity, and turn it off, right? So, where is it? AirPlay and continuity? I know it's somewhere. Maybe it's settings general. Yeah, settings general, AirPlay and continuity, and you can turn continuity camera on or off. But he hadn't done that. He checked, it was on. He's like, I don't know what to do. I guess I'll just use my webcam. And then, like 10 minutes before we recorded, he texted me and he's like, I figured it out. The only thing I changed was after reading the instructions for StreamYard, which is the platform we use, he says, they told me that I needed to put the phone in lock mode. He's like, the whole time, I thought I had to unlock my phone to get it to work as continuity camera. No, 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 no. It's exactly the opposite. It needs to be locked so that you can invoke continuity camera. Otherwise, it won't show up. So thank you, Josh, for sharing that with us. Yeah, good stuff.
Wait, so one of the things you just said there, I think, is an opposite tip for me. You said you can actually manually activate continuity. Did you say that?
No, you can manually disable the phone from ever offering itself as a continuity camera.
Okay. Yes.
But
I wish there was an ability to like force it into continuity camera mode.
Same.
But
yeah. But
you know,
locking
like,
it is,
sometimes it doesn't come on, and it's like, can I just turn it on?
Yes. I've been there too.
No, even when it's locked, I've been, or it's in lock mode. It happens with Zoom for me all the time. It's just like I have to toggle on and off. The one solution I found that's most reliable is turn off Wi-Fi and turn Wi-Fi back on.
Interesting.
Because I think it does the initial handshake with Bluetooth but actually does the like video feed through like local, you know, like a peer-to-peer Wi-Fi, I think.
That is correct. I think you're right. It's doing Bluetooth for discovery and then Wi-Fi, kind of like CarPlay, wireless CarPlay does. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. Soccer Hallways in the chat in Discord at MacGeekGab.com/Discord says, you can, in a sense, cause continuity camera to you can force it to happen. Just plug it into the Mac. Once connected, you can unplug and put it somewhere else. So interesting. That is perhaps one way, but it's still not like there's no button you can press to say go be a continuity camera right now. And that
right,
that's
exactly. Yeah, like to put it into that mode, like when it goes in the mode, the screen changes, everything changes, right? Yep. I want to put it in that mode manually.
And maybe even pick which computer it goes to. So
that'd be nice too. Yeah. So Terry says, hi, Dave, Pete, and Adam. Well, hello. You might already know this, but if not, when you are connected to your network, you can go into Passwords Wi-Fi, tap on your network, and right there is Show Network QR Code. I didn't until a friend showed me. I took a screenshot and posted it in my kitchen. Now, whenever anyone comes in and asks me what the network password is, I direct them to the QR code, and it works on Android and, of course, on iPhones seamlessly. Been loving your podcast since about 2004. Well, that's about as long as we've been around. So that would be from the beginning. So thank you. He says, I think, and I have learned so much. Thanks for the tips and the stories from you and my fellow listeners.
That's true. Yeah, we do. Cool. We have, your fellow listeners send in more tips than we do. Yes, that's for sure. Yeah. We are all fellow listeners here. So, yeah.
Yeah, I did that QR code thing years ago, and it was great. I just had it posted on the wall in my living room, and when people would come in, it's just like, now I use the tap thing more frequently. I just like the whole, you know, boop the phones together, as Michael Johnston used to like to say.
Yeah. Yeah. That works. Yep.
Get them near each other and you connect to Wi-Fi.
I think there's a lag today between us, Adam, because I can tell we're stumbling when one of us starts to speak when the other is speaking. I think there's about a half second lag. I don't know that there's anything we can do about it. I just figured I'd acknowledge it aloud, so A, we both know, but also so those of you listening are aware that we're aware that this is feeling a little disjointed. It's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Sorry, it might be me. I have my notes over the video, so I'll try to pay more
attention. I think it's an audio. I think it's a VoIP lag. I don't think it's a video lag. I think it's just the way we. Yeah. It happens sometimes. It's, you know, technology. I found a quick tip this week. When I go to a conference, especially, but there's other times when I do this, another time would be if you want to put a sports team schedule like on your calendar, you can download, like a lot of times they will offer, hey, download this ICS file and import it into your calendar. And that's a one-time import. And that's okay, but like for a conference where I might be going in and changing what favorites I have or whatever, or a sports team where like things might change or evolve on the schedule, that one-time import can kind of be a liability. There's a solution. Instead of downloading the file, copy the link that you would use to download the file, the exact same link that you would click to download. Just copy the link and then put that link, go into your calendar and subscribe to a calendar and paste that link in and tell it update every hour or every day or however often you want to have it update. And then it will download it. And that effectively makes it a subscription and you're good to go. So and then the calendar will stay up to date with whatever the server has, whatever the conference or the sports team or whatever. So even if they don't offer a way to subscribe, if they offer a way to download, that is a way to subscribe. It's the same freaking thing. And I don't know why it took me until yesterday to think to try this because I'm going to Podcast Movement in a couple of weeks. And it's like, there's got to be a way. I'm like, well, what if I just put it in? It's like, yep, that works. I'm like, oh, I wish I'd thought of this 10 years ago. Alas, that's how we are.
Nice.
Yeah. What's next?
I got Burn.
Burn.
As a tip about the Apple Watch crown. He says, if you're looking at your Apple Watch in the working face mode instead of the always on face mode, rotating the crown downward takes you to the notification section, which is at the top of the watch's stack. From the top, you can rotate the crown upwards and go back to the main screen. If you continue rotating the crown upwards, you move through the Siri section, which, by the way, is editable, followed by the All Apps section to the bottom of the watch's stack. This single simple movement of rotating the crown, which covers all of the watch's sections except for Control Center, accessed via the button below the crown, And the face editing, accessed via a long press on the face, is great, a great bit of design, which would be nice to have an equivalent of in the other OSs. For example, wouldn't it be nice to hold a modifier key and with one finger drag down across your laptop's trackpad to move through all the sections of a series of app functions or a series of apps or file systems or menu options or web interface options? Well, now he's just getting crazy. Or shortcuts or whatever you'd like to string together. Kind of an ultimate scroll or stroll through all your options. Burn.
Huh. I know that I have invoked the things that you just walked us through, but as you were walking us through them, I did them intentionally. Like, it was like, oh, let me go up. Oh, that's how you get there. Then I went down. I think part of the issue for me is that I've used an Apple Watch since day one, and the UX, the user experience, has changed in terms of how these things work, right? So I whatever was in my muscle memory is not what my muscle memory needs to be for the current UX. So this is fascinating, but I really, Adam, I like the idea of what he described, like on our Macs and stuff, right? Like that would be interesting. Is there a third party utility that like you said, hold down a modifier key and now your scroll wheel becomes that, or your you know, your trackpad scrolling, whatever.
Yeah, I feels like one of those things that would be cool and then I would never use.
I don't know. Like, how comfortable are you with how notification, like how to invoke Notification Center by clicking in the thing in the upper right and then scrolling through it? Do you find that clunky? I do. But
yes.
Maybe.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, I totally agree with that. Yeah, no. I never go in there, is the reality of it.
Right. Okay. So we're on the same page there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea would be I could invoke something and it would just go in there and I could scroll through all that and.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's maybe somebody knows of a third party utility. Let us know. feedback@macgeekab.com. We'd love to hear about it. We'll run for fun. Sent in the next quick tip, not to feedback@macgeekab.com, but to macgeekab.com/discord, that there are some important Plex updates happening here in 2025. The big one is that there's an upcoming Plex Pass price increase. Wow, that's something I should have rehearsed. Plex Pass price increase. There it is. It's happening on April 29th. The current price of a lifetime Plex Pass is $120, $119.99 US. After April 29th, it will be $249.99. So if you don't yet have a Plex Pass, now is a good time to get a lifetime pass. There's also some changes changes with how remote playback works. So if you have a Plex Pass, then remote playback will continue to be available to you without interruption from any Plex Media server, even after these changes go into effect. When running your own Plex Media server as a subscriber, other users to whom you have granted access can also stream from your server without any additional charge, not even a mobile activation fee. Beginning on April 29th, though, users will be able to stream from servers on a remote network in one of two ways. You can upgrade to a Plex Pass subscription, which is a great option for server owners, or remote users can buy a new subscription called a Remote Watch Pass. So really, just solve this problem now. Get your lifetime Plex Pass. Stop thinking about it. Like, it's $120. I bought mine for $79, I think, a number of years ago. I mean, this is not the first price increase. It's just been the first one in probably 10 years. More than 10 years, they said. But yeah, it's time. go get your lifetime Plex pass. If you're test it out, you've got a month, right? So if you've never installed Plex, you've been thinking about it, now's the time. Install it, test it. If you see value to it, immediately get it, because for both remote streaming and the Plex pass is also required for downloading to your devices for offline viewing. But you can install it and test it without paying a dime. So, and you can run a Plex server on your Mac. You can run a Plex server on your NAS. You can run a Plex server. I think Jeff Gamet still runs a Plex server on his Raspberry Pi.
So. This is true. And it's great advice. I mean, it's Pete's advice too. And I bought one so long ago, you know, when it was $80 or less, I can't remember, and never, ever regretted it. So
yeah, right. Right.
Good thing.
Yeah. It's a good thing. It's a very good thing. We got one more left, right?
Yeah, we got Porthos John, who says, in the before times when I wanted to run an app installer that I downloaded that wasn't signed with an Apple cert, I simply right-clicked it in the Finder and selected open. A nice dialog would pop up telling me that I could still run it if I really, really, really wanted to, and it ran. Now in Sequoia, it doesn't pop up that notice dialog. I was about to run screaming, and then I thought, what would Pilot Pete do? That had me shaking my head because I couldn't conceive of getting my pilot's license only to be able to practice barrel rolls until I was sick. Instead, I opened System Settings, Privacy and Security, and sure enough, at the bottom where you can select where to allow applications from, was a pop-up warning saying that someone had tried to run this app and it wasn't secure. But did I want to allow it anyway? Oh. Problem solved. So the right-click open thing doesn't work anywhere? Why would they take that away?
Dude, they took a lot away. Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question, Adam. I don't know. Yep. But at least now we know where to go. I wish there was a way. This happens not just with apps, but sometimes you get like an extension or something that needs to run, and you don't really get a warning that you have to go, and you only have 30 minutes before that expires, right? And then you got to like trigger it again somehow. So, I don't know. Like, they give us too many warning dialogues for security stuff that we don't want to see in macOS 15, and not the ones that we do.
Right?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, would it kill them to just in the dialogue that pops up that says you can't run this, have a thing that says run anyway, and then when you click that, another thing that says, are you sure? And then you click it again, and then it runs.
All right, folks, look, you know that we love fast, reliable storage here, and OWC's new Thunderbolt 5 Envoy Ultra is ridiculously fast. We're talking over 6,000 megabytes per second. That's twice as fast as Thunderbolt 4 or USB 4. Honestly, it's so fast, you could back up an entire season of 8K cat videos before your cat knocks it off the desk. And good news, this thing's built to survive that fall. The Envoy Ultra is weatherproof, dustproof, dropproof. I mean, it could probably survive a trip through a black hole, though, you know, don't test that. Real-time data redundancy keeps your project safe, and with bus power and a built-in Thunderbolt cable, it is truly grab and grow. Perfect for video pros, audio geeks, or anyone who just loves being prepared. And best of all, it runs silent, 0 dB. That's way quieter than it was in my hotel room during South by Southwest last week. Man, the street was loud. Look, folks, don't get caught without solid backups and reliable storage, fast storage for your data. Go to maxsales.com and check out the new Envoy Ultra. You're going to love it. Thanks so much to OWC for doing what they do and for sponsoring this episode. All right. I think we need to do some don't get caught here, Adam. We've got a few that have come in and perhaps worth sharing. Russell has our first don't get caught. He says, after hearing about Fastmail on Mac Geek Gab, I gave it a trial. and then decided to use it as my mail app with a paid subscription. Everything was apparently working fine, and I didn't notice that a few messages went missing from my main Apple Mail account that I had forwarded to my Fastmail because I was just using that as my primary. Not enough messages disappeared that it was obvious, and I really thought that everything was sorted. But before long, some important emails did not get delivered, and it caused me to miss a couple of deadlines with real financial consequences. That's not good. Even though I had stopped using the Apple Mail app and it was not being launched, it turned out that quite a lot of junk mail, and some, of course, not junk mail, was being filtered and appeared in the all junk folder of the Mail app, and of course, also on iCloud in the web on the cloud, because that's where the filtering was actually happening. But it did not get forwarded to Fastmail for it to filter. I have definitely got enable junk mail filtering turned off, and also the faded out setting of mark as junk mail but leave in my inbox set just in case. But on iCloud, there are no rules which have been set. So if you are using a third-party mail service for Apple Mail and forwarding your Apple Mail account there, it's a good idea to check the junk mail folder on the web interface of the forwarded service or by opening your mail app, something that's subscribed to that account. This is not just limited to mail, to iCloud mail. I've had this issue with forwarding Gmail accounts to somewhere. I've gone in on Gmail and made a rule that says if junk, do not move to the junk folder. And Gmail will even warn you and say, this is going to pass through all the spam. And also, I think it warns you, and even if it doesn't, I will warn you, this will make it, a forwarded message is more difficult for engines to see as spam. So for example, if I'm forwarding from Gmail or iCloud to Fastmail, that makes that extra layer there removes the ability for Fastmail's junk filters to see all of the things that they would want to see. And so you wind up getting more, truly, for more false negatives and false positives because it's missing some of those signals that it's not hearing directly from the mail server. But that's better. At least then you only have one junk folder to check. I don't know if iCloud has the ability to say, like, send all junk along. I should check that, though, because I do something similar. So, yeah.
I don't know either. I use SaneBox.
Right. But SaneBox, does SaneBox see your iCloud account directly?
Yeah, actually, I don't use it with iCloud. That's fair. This is really about iCloud.
Well, so it's more about a mail service that you're not checking directly. And it really doesn't matter whether you're using, like, I use Apple Mail and Thunderbird. I kind of use them both nowadays. But I don't have iCloud Mail enabled in either of them. The only place iCloud Mail is checked for me is on the web. And so,
ooh,
yeah. But it forwards, like I have it forwarding to my Fastmail, but I'm looking to see if there's any way, like, mailbox behavior, like, I don't know that I can change the junk behavior on iCloud. There's no way to turn off junk filtering. That's really interesting.
Can you do it in the account settings and on the client?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm in. Oh, I see. In the account settings in Apple Mail. No, because he did that. He has it turned off there, and it doesn't matter. Yeah, this is really interesting. Like, if I go into junk, is there like no? There's no way. Huh? Yeah. Mail forwarding. No. Okay. Rules. Can I add a new rule? Can I say, is junk? Nope. Nope. There is no way to do this.
So what would you want to do?
Well, so my scenario is a perfect one to use here. I have an iCloud account like most of us do. It winds up being used for some things. Either I've signed up with it because, for something, because it was the easiest email address to give someone at the time, or it's an like an Apple thing, like it's related to my calendar, and so calendar invites come to and from, you know, this address, whatever. There's a few things, but not insignificant things that come into my iCloud. I have gone in on the web to iCloud's mail settings and said, forward all my mail to the email address that my primary email address for my Fastmail account. Okay, so
cool.
I don't have to check my iCloud mail. I have it turned off in my mail clients. They do not see it.
Sure.
Not even on my phone. But I get the mail in my main inbox, which is where I want it. Anything that iCloud, the server, and again, this is also true with Gmail. Anything the iCloud, the server, deems as junk does not get forwarded. And now I'm on the web interface for iCloud, and I'm seeing 18 messages over the last month that were junk. And I can tell you one, let's see, two, three, four, five of those 18 are messages that from mailing lists that I actually want to receive. And I this is only for the last month, because of course junk older than a month just gets summarily deleted. So how long have I been missing messages? I've talked about it on the show. I have it on my calendar to remind me to check my spam every 2 days. It is like religious, and it allows me to take 60 seconds and scan through my spam, and it's great. But it's one spam folder that I look at. I need to look at two spam folders, and this is the other one, because I have no way of telling this. I mean, I can go in manually and say, you know, not junk. How do I even say not junk on iCloud? I guess I just move it to the inbox. There is no like flag this as good. So I got to move it to the inbox. I'm curious to see if these, as I move them to the inbox, will, you know, find
it'll
their
trade
way
it.
To, yeah. Will it, well, will it forward these when I move them? You know, that's the other question is, do these get forwarded? So I'll have to see. Not good.
I was just Googling. Does iCloud have a way to whitelist sender emails?
Yeah.
I think you have to add them to your contacts, I think is what
that would make sense. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the methodology, if I'm remembering correctly. And that's what, Bing intelligence says, AI says.
Sure. Yeah, there you go. Yep.
Guess you could do that.
Interesting. Interesting, interesting. So thank you for that, Russell. Now you've got me. At least now we're aware. Like, check all of your spam folders, not just your main one. I guess that's the lesson here. I don't want to check two. I want to check one. Geek challenge. How do we just tell it? Because like I said, on Gmail, you can create a rule that says nothing is junk. Just plow it all through, forward it all. And like I said, well, yeah.
This is what I was getting at is, what if you changed the mailbox behavior? Can you only do that locally with your accounts? So like with my iCloud account locally, right? I can go into the iCloud settings, into mailbox behaviors, and I can make junk not go to junk. It can go to my inbox if I freaking wanted.
Sure.
I don't know why you'd want to do that, but
yeah. Right. No, you couldn't make junk go to your inbox. You could make junk go to another folder, but you can't have junk sent drafts and trash and inbox point to they all need to be unique in an IMAP client. Because all it's doing is it's mapping what the server says to, you know, something else. So the server says, here's the junk folder. Where do you want, what local folder do you want this mapped to? And you can't point them all at the same thing.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just wish there was. I'm just looking. It's surprising that there's nothing about junk in the settings on iCloud. I don't know.
feedback@macgeekgab.com.
That's going to be it. Ed has a don't get caught that is it's about tail scale lock, which is a new feature on tail. Well, I don't know if it's new. He says, I use tail scale all the time. I use it to access my channel's DVR remotely, access my NAS and other things on my network. Recently, after updating my Mac Mini to an M4 model, I was doing some security housekeeping. I have a bunch of old devices that had Tailscale IP addresses that weren't being used. And I also wanted to give Tailscale Lock a try to increase my security when new devices are added. I've been adding and removing devices a lot this past year, and it seemed too easy a process. And I'd been putting off the Tailscale Lock feature, because it's in beta, to let the dust settle a bit. As you may or may not know, Tailscale Lock gives only certain devices the ability to approve new devices. Okay, that makes sense. It's like two-factor authentication using trusted assigned devices on your tailnet. Okay, so this is similar to you're logging into somewhere on Apple, you know, with your Apple account. It says you got to go agree on a different device, and sometimes it shows up on the same device, and so I'm never really sure how secure that is. But anyway, he says, in my case, I was using my Mac Mini and the Tailscale admin console, and I was easily able to add that, my Air, and my iPad Air and my iPhone as trusted devices. You need at least two to set this up. That's a good idea. Yes. Here's where I got caught, he says. When assigning your trusted devices, you need to be aware that you need one of these to be able to run the Tailscale terminal client interface. iOS and iPad devices cannot run a command line interface. I was fumbling around a few days ago, and I logged out of my Tailscale account on my Mac Mini, thinking it was a trivial process to log it back in. This was not the case, and I had a panic moment. I wound up having to remove my Mac Mini as one of the trusted devices from my account entirely and then add it back in. That part was trivial. Where I got caught was the Mac Mini could no longer become a trusted device anymore. You need a device that is both trusted and has the ability to run terminal commands in order to add another trusted device. This was disturbing to me to not have my Mac Mini as a trusted and be able to issue those commands. Down the line, I didn't want to be in a position where I couldn't fully administer the tailnet. The only fix I could find was to disable Tailscale Lock completely and then re-add those three machines from scratch. I did it, and it was trivial as long as you tucked away the disablement secrets that are generated when you first set up Tailscale or Tailnet Lock. This sounds like advice to avoid Tailnet Lock until they sort that out, because it sure seems like while they have the limit in place to require you to use at least two devices in order to set it up, they don't have a limit in place where they require you to make sure that at least two of those two devices are command line compatible. So, interesting. Yeah. So, Tailscale Lock seems cool. Be aware, eyes wide open. That's the I don't know. That's that's the thing. Shall we
don't get caught?
Yeah, don't get caught. Right. Shall we move to questions, Adam?
Sure. Let's move to questions.
I think I'm reading the first one.
I have
for
one.
You.
Yeah, you're reading the first one for me from Ron.
Yeah, I can't find it in here. Do you have it? Oh, I see it. Oh, yes,
yeah, I do.
I see it now. I just was looking in the wrong place, Adam. Ron asks, after listening to and cogitating about a discussion on dual cloud backups in the last week's episode, I realized that I use both iCloud and Backblaze. While I'm not aware yet of any issues, does this count as a potential source of double trouble? And of course, if you didn't hear last week's episode or didn't hear the segment, we were talking about how having two syncing services like iCloud and Dropbox or iCloud and Synology Drive pointing at the same folder can cause a lot of trouble. So his question is, does having iCloud Drive and Backblaze on the same folder cause this trouble?
Yep, that's a pretty simple one. The answer is no, because Backblaze is basically a backup service, not a sync. It's not syncing things. It is taking stuff from your Mac and backing it up to the cloud. So it's a one directional thing. And that's what we mentioned last time too. It's like one way is going to be fine. So like we talked about the example where I have a bunch of folders and things that I have set up using ChronoSync, to do a one-way sync where I'm not syncing deletions. It's not a two-way. I'm going from one location to another location as a backup, quote unquote. So,
yep,
that's it.
It's the one way. You just don't want to have two ways, or more than one two-way sync. I should say three would also be bad. I don't just want to stop at two.
Yeah. Because if one thing's syncing one thing, and then the other thing's trying to sync it back, and they get conflated, that's when you run into trouble.
Yeah, for sure. Yipper. All right. Moving on.
We have a question from Kirshen. He says, Adam, Dave, and Pete, does anyone have any recommendations for a pay-as-you-go VPN service to use while on vacation? We'd be looking for a one-month pass, maybe twice a year. Our concern with signing up for a typical VPN provider is that we would not be able to sign up, then cancel repeatedly when we need the plan. Thanks, Kirshen.
Yeah, I didn't know that if there was an option here. So I did the easy thing. I asked ChatGPT to go and look, and then I confirmed its answers. And it turns out that nearly every VPN that I could think of offers a monthly plan. Now, it is monthly in that you would need to sign up and then cancel before your month is up. So that may or may not be the way you want to go. You know, the two that came to mind to actually check and confirm, but I will put a link to the ChatGPT chat that I use that explains all this and lists all of the various, the various things and what their prices are, and even give some advice, because I've taught ChatGPT to be opinionated, which is a great thing, by the way. I think we talked about it in a previous episode, but it's great because it always gives me its opinion at the end. That's just wonderful. But the two that I thought to check were private internet access, which, yes, will let you sign up for $11.99 per month, or $57 for 2 years. So your use case, Kirshen, of, you know, 1 month twice a year, so that's $24 twice a year, technically less than $57 for 2 years. Although if like, they're not currently a sponsor, but PIAVPN.com/MGG still goes to a page that gives you 2 years plus 4 months for free. So it works out to be $2.03 a month, but you're paying for, you know, 28 months or whatever that is. So public math, don't do it. But, you're really close there to, you know, you're what, $7 shy of hitting that, because it's, you know, if it's 12, 24, 48. So you're $9 shy. I would, again, man, I can't believe I did public math twice in the same episode. I would say just buy the 2 year plan of that one. ExpressVPN, similar, it's $13 a month. And again, you'd have to go and cancel before they bill you for the next month. But again, ExpressVPN's Mac Geek Gab deal gives you 2 years and 4 months free. But their price is $139.72. So more than double what private internet access is at the moment. So, you know, there you go. Choose wisely. That's the answer. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if we want to devolve into this discussion.
Devolve away.
Or not. But I know that, you know, you can run your own VPN, right? You can set up and run your own VPN, essentially. I think I think you and Pete even do it,
100%.
If I'm remembering correctly, through like Synology. Does anybody just make an appliance, like something I can just buy and configure and just plug into my network?
Well, yeah, it's called a router. In that many routers now offer, like, that's where I run my local VPN. Is previously I had a Synology router. Now I have the Unify Cloud Gateway Max, and both of them offer inbound VPN. So And you can use it as your, you know, you can send all traffic through. There's a little switch on your iPhone or your Mac. When you connect to the VPN, you say send all traffic, then it sends all traffic through. However, you know, we just talked about Tailscale, and you can install Tailscale on your Mac at home, right? Or even better, or not even or, and you can also install it on your Apple TV at home, a device that is on your network and always on. And not only can you connect to your device, what Tailscale, it does many things, and I'm about to share a second thing that it does. But the primary use of it, that certainly that we talk about here on the show, is that each device that is connected to your Tailscale account becomes part of what's called your Tailnet. And when you are on a device that is on your Tailnet, you can connect to other devices that are on your Tailnet as if they are local to you, regardless of where you actually are. So if you can easily screen share to your Mac or file share to your you know, from your laptop to your desktop Mac while you're at home, if you install Tailscale on both of them and log them into the same Tailscale account, and it's free, by the way, for what we would use it for, it's free. Of course, there's a freemium offering. If you take that laptop and go to, a different city, I was going to name a city, but then you might be in that city, and then that gets weird. Go to a different city, go to a hotel, connect to the internet, and as soon as you log into Tailscale, which could happen automatically, you can also connect to your computer at home, as long as it's on, and file share and screen share and do all those things. Of course, you're limited to the speed of the internet connection between you. So that might be your home internet being the thing, or the hotel internet, depending on, you know, which is faster. But other than speed differences, it is as though they are local. That's how Tailscale works. Also, Tailscale has the option to denote certain devices as exit nodes. And once you, so I have said that my Apple TV is an exit node. And now when I connect to Tailscale, I go in the little menu and it says, oh, do you want to use this exit node? And as soon as I do, I am effectively VPN'd through my house via my Apple TV.
Okay. So now the last question I have, because I was looking at Tailscale, because it's obviously it's got a free level for personal use.
Yep.
Says limited to 3 users, 100 device. Oh, 100 devices. That was, I just answered my own question because it said add-on devices are 50 cents per month, but that would be over the 100.
Yeah.
I would assume.
I have more than 100 devices on my local network, but I think I only have maybe 10 devices logged into my Tailnet. You know, each of my Macs.
Tailscale, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Each of my Macs, my iPhone, my iPad, my Apple TV. I think that's it. Oh, my disk stations. You can log your NAS in, and my NASs are both also set up as exit nodes, but I've done some speed tests and I found, believe it or not, that my Apple TV is the fastest exit node that I currently own. I guess I could set up my Mac Mini as an exit node and that might be faster than the Apple TV. I never thought about that. Now that that's always on because of another thing that I have to do with it, but I should try that.
All right. Sorry for taking us down that rabbit hole.
But I'm glad you did. Like
for Kirshen, this is her solution because I know she's nerdy enough to figure this out.
Yes. Right. It's It really. I mean, it's hard to say. I think it's fairly easy to set this up. They will walk you through it. You never once, I know we talked with Ed about Tailscale lock and you need to use the terminal. You could do all of the things that I've described and never touch a terminal prompt ever. It is not necessary for Tailscale at all. So as long as your Mac is logged in, then you're fine. But like your Apple TV, it automatically does it. It's like, you know, and that's part of why I have an exit node set up on that is because I know even if the power goes out and comes back, as long as the Apple TV powers up, and that could be a question, but that's a whole other, it's a whole other issue. Amazon Basics UPSs have an issue where if the power like flickers too many times in a short period of time, they just turn off. It's like, no, don't turn off until your battery dies. That's it. Like, that's your, you have one job. I don't know. Anyway, that's a tangent. Your thing about Tailscale exit nodes, that's the way to set up a VPN at home, because you already own the hardware. It's either a Mac or an Apple TV or a disk station or a QNAP or, you know, whatever. Like, it works on all of them. Yeah. Tailscale changed my whole like thing. And now I can invite other people into my tailnet. So I invited my son into my tailnet, and he now, from his apartment, is able, he has his TV, which is, his Apple TV, I guess, is tailneted into ours using our Apple TV as an exit node. And the reason is Fubo lets you, I know it's against the terms of service, probably. I haven't read them, so I'm not certain of this, but it might be. Anyway, don't get caught. Fubo allows you to have 10 devices playing from your account, at least with the account that we have. And they can be in different locations. That's totally fine. TVs, and there are certain devices deemed as TVs and certain devices not, TVs all must be in the same location. So if we're not watching from our TV, but say we're watching from our laptops on Fubo, Lucas can watch on his TV at his apartment. But as soon as we try to watch on our TV, it'll start telling, the other one, oh, it started watching from a different location. You're done. But if we have two TVs in our house from the same IP address, those are fine. You can imagine there's a case where it's impossible for Fubo to know where that comes from if Tailscale is involved. Perhaps. Just want to share that. So there you go. Don't get caught.
I need this because we got caught recently because I have HBO Max, and the other day I was trying to watch something. I think my wife was on, and then it's like, you have two people watching. You can't watch this now. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? It was my kids. I had to call them and tell them to get off.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yep.
My adult kids, let's be clear. So they're not paying for it.
Right.
Like, right. I'm paying for this. I get priority.
Yeah, you get priority. Yeah. Yeah, Soccer Hallway says, I sense an update from Fubo coming, and maybe, but I don't think there's any way to do it, because the Apple TV, unlike our iPhones and iPads, our Apple TV has no way of determining its location by itself other than using its IP address. Like, there is no GPS in there. I suppose Apple could build an API to determine location that, in addition to IP, also used local Wi-Fi networks. If they have location attached to their MAC addresses, like, it could scan for those, and it does have the ability to do that. So there is a technical possibility, but Apple would need to be the one to implement it, not Fubo. And Apple has not implemented that yet. And they've got every TV app in the world actively building, apps for Apple TV. So I don't think they're incentivized to do this. I sure hope they're not. It's rare that this happens.
Got one more?
Occasionally. Yeah. I got one for you. Charles asks, in the photo library on the Mac, titles have prominence. On the iPhone and shared libraries, there are no titles, only captions. I've searched in vain for a tool to copy titles from photos to captions and keep them in sync so that I can use this on both platforms. Apps such as Exifer, Exifer, do not seem to function, at least not directly in the photo library stored on iCloud. Ah, right. They don't sync. The changes don't sync. Interesting. AI code generators always seem to produce scripting errors. I've tried AppleScript and shortcuts, JavaScript and shortcuts, shortcuts alone, Automator, Terminal. Although I have to say, I am not tech nor code proficient. There may be solutions that work in some photo libraries, but I don't want the hassle of local photo libraries. That's the word. But I don't want the hassle of downloading from the iCloud and re-uploading to iCloud. I want it to just sync. Any suggestions on how to batch copy titles to captions working directly in my Photos app on my iCloud Photos library?
Yep. Yeah, so I looked into this a little bit. First of all, highly annoying. I don't use titles or captions all that much, but highly annoying that on the Mac, you can go in to your photos, and if they have titles, you can choose an option in the view settings to show the titles under, you know, when you have your thumbnails, you can have titles under those. There's no way to show captions. You can add captions to your photos, but that's part of, I think, the EXIF data. So it's in the, you have to, you know, get info on it or use the little side panel or whatever. On iOS photos, you can't see titles at all. I don't even know if that data syncs. I don't know if it's only stored locally in your Mac's photo library or why that is. But of course on iOS, if you hit the little info button, you can then see in the information, you know, panel, the captions. So you can have captions. So that's kind of what he's talking about for people who haven't gone down this rabbit hole. Cause I hadn't. And I was like, well, that's super weird. Like, why is that?
Yeah.
So like you said, what he's asking here is like, I have titles on my Mac, I would like to have those also copied into the caption EXIF data automatically so that when I'm on my iOS device, that stuff will be synced and I can at least pull it up, you know, there on my iOS device. And I did the research. There is this app called Photo Exifer that lets you do a bunch of things with the photo metadata, EXIF metadata, including it has a automation for copying title data from your photos on your Mac into the caption EXIF data, which is great. Sounds like the perfect solution. What Charles found out, though, is that for that to work on your Mac, you need to have all your photos stored locally. And it sounds like what's going on is he's using iCloud syncing. So most of his photos on his Mac are not actually on his Mac. They're not downloaded. So it can't work with that. And he doesn't want to go through the hassle of having to download all his photos, run the program, get all the data updated, and then, you know, sync everything back to iCloud. So I understand that. My question would be, and this goes into my whole backup thing, is like, I am a very firm believer that there should be at least one Mac that you have set up with your photo library where you use the photo library setting, download originals to this Mac. And the reason is, if you're not doing that, you're also not backing up. If you're doing local backup, Time Machine, any other local backup, and you're not downloading your entire photo library to one Mac, you're relying entirely on Apple in the cloud for your photo library. So what I would advise is at least set up one Mac where you just use the option download originals. So the originals are always on that single Mac. And then you presumably could use Photo Exifier to do what you want. And then that would sync up to the cloud. So that's what I would set up for two reasons. One, it solves this problem. And two, now you can set up that Mac with a complete backup of your photo library to make sure that your photos never, ever go missing.
Yeah. That, yes. Okay. That makes sense. Because when I saw his question come in, I was like, well, Photo Exifier, like, isn't this what it does? But you're right. It has to be able to touch the photo, not just see that it exists elsewhere to do it. It needs to be there because it's doing it locally. Yeah.
The EXIF data, it's my understanding, is a sidecar in the photo form, basically a sidecar. Is that what they call it?
I think it's in the resource fork, Adam.
Okay.
It's not.
Yeah. What I don't understand fully, but it's part of the file data. Like it's part of the photo file. So it needs to be able to manipulate that. And if it's just a pointer to something that's in the cloud, obviously it can't do that.
Right. Right. Yeah. We need to use ResEdit. That's what's going to solve this problem.
I loved ResEdit.
Yeah.
Editing icons and stuff.
Right. That was the resource fork versus the data fork, right? That's what it,
Kirk, right? Yep. Oh, yeah. You could do all kinds of fun stuff on your Mac back in the day with ResEdit.
Yes.
All kinds of tricks.
ResEdit, we loved the... It's just not a thing anymore. I mean, because the files aren't... It made sharing files with non-Mac people very difficult because the files were two files, but also sharing files... That was like ResEdit goes back to a day when sharing files between computers, even if you didn't have an issue with the formats of the file itself, was like, well, even if, you know, how do you get a Word file from this computer to that computer? Well, my Mac writes in, you know, was it HFS at the time? Probably. And Windows was writing in, you know, FAT or something. I was like, well, I can't read FAT on the Mac. They can't read. There were third party utilities that sucked that. You know, so it was a whole thing. So the fact that a file had a resource fork was not the limiting factor for most use cases, but it was fun editing. Yeah, you could really edit icons. You could change all kinds of things. Made you feel like a rock star. Yeah, it's fun. Alas, you know who makes us feel like rock stars, Adam? All our premium listeners. Really all, to be fair, all of you make us feel like rock stars. Our premium supporters, those of you who are both able and interested in supporting us directly, it's icing. I say it's icing on the cake, and it is. It's also a very integral part of how and why we're able to continue to do this show, you know, here almost 20 years later. I know Adam's been podcasting for more than 20 years, but, you know, I haven't yet. So this show hasn't yet. But soon, like we're, what, 3 months away? I think less than 3 months away from that day. But in any event, we want to take a minute and give a shout out to all of you who have contributed in the recent past. And it's been a little while. So if I make some changes to the flow of this for efficiency, it's only for efficiency. It has no bearing on we still love you all the same. So thanks to both Walt and Jim for $100 contributions. Thanks to Walter and Rich for $60 contributions. Thanks to Kenneth and Bradford for $50 contributions. Thanks to Larry for a $45 contribution. Thanks to Thomas, David J, and David P, and Bob for $30 contributions. And thanks to the following for $25 contributions. Pierre, Timo, Domenico, Jeffrey, Martine, Daniel, Alan, Michael, Matt, Jonathan, Mike, Wesson, Elliot, Ed, William, Russell, Robert, John, Louis Michel, Margaret, Stuart, another Michael, Graham, Joshua, another William, Peter, Mark, David, Larry, Kirshen, Jeff, David, Eric, Jonathan, and Bruce. Thank you for your $25 contributions. Thanks to Bob for his $15 contributions. And then $10 contributions. Thanks to Stephen, John, Jason, Joseph, another Stephen, Wagner, Robert, James, another James, Chris, Bill, Barry, Timothy, Mark, Abel, Kevin, Jonathan, another Jonathan, Anthony, Paul, Neil, another Michael, Ken, James, Santiago, Phil, another Mark, Donald, Peter, Nick, Scott, Cal, Jeremiah, Brian, and another John. Thanks to all of you. MacGeekUp.com/premium is where you can go if you want to learn about that. It is, of course, not mandatory. You'll all get to hear all the episodes. That was a decision made by your fellow listeners who are premium subscribers years ago. We had some episodes that we were doing just for premium subscribers. And after about a year of that, you wrote in and said, this doesn't seem right. We want everybody to benefit from all of the advice. All this stuff should be out there. Just give us our premium email address so that, you know, we can get to you first. And you do get to us first. That is still the case for sure. If there are other premium perks that you can think of, let us know. premium@macgeekup.com. We're always eager. Like this show is, when I say it's ours, I mean that collectively. Like Pete, Adam, and me, we're just stewards. Pete, Adam, and I. are just stewards of what we do here. And we're so lucky to be able to do this. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to continue doing that. It's amazing.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. We got to find a workflow to do that where it's not just me reading everything. Let's change that for next time. Habits. I just get into habits. I talk too much. Speaking
of this cool stuff,
let's go.
Cool stuff. Russell has something. Russell says developer Zenwheel has a cool and very minimalistic IP app for the menu bar. It doesn't splurge along the menu bar and take up a lot of space with the actual address like most others, but is a very small cloud symbol with either a tiny check mark, padlock, circle, arrow, refresh, or when you're refreshing it, or an exclamation mark to show connected via VPN, refreshing or not connected, et cetera, et cetera. A click on the symbol shows a drop-down menu with IP address, copy address function, and geographical location. There are lots of IP address apps for the menu bar, but this is super lightweight, takes up very little space, and at a glance shows if a VPN is in use or not. The VPN at a glance indicator is valuable for me. A quick check to ensure that a VPN is in use. I now use PIA VPN after hearing about it on MacGeekab. Great. But also a private VPN service. So need an indicator for any VPN and not just PIA. So this is pretty cool. Yeah. You can just get your... So it's not just an IP address thing. Because I was going to say, like, I always use ipchicken.com, which I've used like forever. But... more and more, I think I just type in Google, what is my IP, and then it just intelligence thing happens. But yeah, this is pretty cool. It does a lot more than just give you your IP address.
Yeah. I like a menu bar, like at a glance way to see if you're connected to a VPN. And especially if you're using multiple different VPNs for different reasons. You know, you have to look in three different places to see, is this one connected? Is this one connected? By looking at this, it's like, boom, it's connected. I wonder if being connected to a Tailscale exit node turns it into, yes, you are connected to a VPN mode. It should, and it probably does, because if it looks at your public IP, like it can see that. It acts like a VPN to the operating system. So, yeah, it should work.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. When I was at South by Southwest, I met with the MOFT people, MOFT. They're the ones that make an origami stand slash, it's not a case, it's MagSafe. It connects to the back of your iPhone, obviously, like MagSafe things do, and you can use it like a holder, kind of like PopSocket or OSnap-ish, where you can put your finger through it. But you can also like origami fold the thing out to turn into a stand and things like that. They have a new thing that is their MOFT Snap Note stand. And it's a similar kind of thing. It snaps onto the back of your iPhone. It's all MagSafe. And you can, it has a notepad in it, like with paper. And it has a pen. And the pen sort of folds flat. And then when you want to use it, you can roll it up so that you actually have something to hold and then write your little notes and close it. And I used this one day at South By while I was walking around the conference. They have an expo floor where there's like things like this, you know, little booths and that sort of thing. And it was really nice having something to just write with. To make quick notes as opposed to typing. I've gotten very used to typing into the notes app while I'm talking with someone, but that's still more distracting for me than just writing. And of course I don't have a stylus for my phone. I guess I could do it that way too. But I feel like with that, I'd still be looking at my phone to make sure that it was capturing what I was writing. Because the Apple Pencil doesn't work with it. So you'd have to use one of those third party things that sort of approximates a finger and, you know, all that stuff. With writing, I could just write and look at someone because I know Like, you can even feel when the pen, like if the pen were to have run out of ink, which it didn't. But, you know, we know what that feeling is like still. We still retain the ability to sense that. But, yeah, pretty cool little thing. So that's the Moft Snap Note stand. And it also folds out and can be a stand. And the notes are all little sticky notes. So you just peel them off and you can put them. There's even a place inside the case to, like, put your priority notes and things like that. It's a fun little thing, more useful than you might think, even though it probably has Steve Jobs rolling in his grave, but you know.
I presume it doesn't do pass-through charging because of the paper and stuff like
Correct.
That, right?
Yeah, it's a good insulator okay. against that. Yes. Yeah.
This immediately got me thinking, like, I don't need all of that functionality, but I like this idea of MagSafe attaching a, like, little notepad to your iPhone.
Yeah.
I might DIY this with some of those little MagSafe stickers you can get, like, on Amazon or whatever, and just, like, stick them into a little... I use Field Notes a lot. I'd have to find the right-sized little notepad, but if I could find the right-size shape one, I could just have a notepad always available, just stuck to the back of my phone.
Yeah. It's called the Snap Flow. I'm learning. I wrote down the wrong thing. I called it the Snap Note Stand, but it is. But you know, it's the Snap Flow. It's $39, and
it's really cool.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could probably build this yourself for less than $39. Well, not this, but
not all this functionality.
Just the notepad part. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't even be close to this. It's not a stand. It doesn't have the built-in little pen, you know, like
right.
This has a lot more functionality. But I'm just thinking, like, you know, I take physical notes all the time. I mean, I have one right here right now.
Yeah.
I always have one on my desk. So the idea of having one always just there with my phone. The only other thing I'd have to figure out, and again, I'd probably just use some sort of magnet thing, is something to keep the, the cover closed. When it's attached to my phone, so it's not flopping open all the time. But again, some really thin magnets would solve that problem. So
this is interesting. They have the note stand, which was the thing that they were showing me and gave me a sample of at South By. But they also have just a notepad without the stand, so it's a little thinner. And then they also have a thing called the note flip. So the notepad opens left to right. The note flip opens top to bottom in terms of the orientation of the related to the note. It opens on the note flip opens on the short side up for most of us. And the note pad opens on the long side of the note. That's interesting. Huh.
The flip is if you're a cop or
a cop a
private investigator That's or whatever, right. It's the kind of thing they open up.
It's so true. That's the image I had in my head too. I love that. I got one more cool stuff found from listener Bill. We were talking about AI, and he says, I actually had to put a post on Facebook. I'll link to it. I posted a little bit about how I've been using AI and asked people, to share how they were using it. And some of this stuff is blowing my mind. We'll mine through that and share a few of the things. Like, some of the ways that people are using it is just amazing. And Bill shares that he says, I've applied different AI stacks across various applications. Some were fruitful. The one I wanted to call out was jaw-dropping for me, is using Claude Code. So Claude is Anthropic's AI, and they have a code assistant engine. Claude Code with Sonnet 3.7 as an assistant for app development. I've been applying it to my app, and the results are impressive. Unlike other solutions such as GitHub Copilot or Kodi, used as VS Code extensions, Claude Code can understand your complete code base and make broader changes. The others seem better in smaller scope, changing a screen, adding member functions, whereas Claude Code can take on broader prompts. I encourage you and anyone listening that codes to give it a whirl. It works well in the Mac's terminal, and I've just scratched the surface. My understanding is that MCPs, which are kind of like plugins for AI engines so that they're portable across others, is that MCPs open up Claude to external APIs such as Supabase, Firebase, etc. Interesting. We will check that out. Thank you, Bill. Good stuff. Yeah, it's fascinating. What the conversation on Facebook has been really interesting because it, you know, no one has found utility in just, you know, telling AI, go build me this thing. Let me know when you're done. Right. It's, you know, it's everybody's using it as an assistant. I've been thinking about this. It's a shame that we've already burned the term virtual assistant, because mm-hmm. to me, that's what AI is. Like, that's how I use it. And it seems like that's how most people use it. And you know, we used the term virtual assistant years ago to talk about, you know, remote assistants or remote workers. And I never liked it even then because it's like, well, these people are real. Like, why do we call them virtual? Like, they're real humans doing this work. They're just, you know, location shifted and all that. So, like, ChatGPT is my virtual assistant. But I have found one of our listeners said to try Perplexity, and it does seem to be, in for some things, it seems to be better than ChatGPT for. Like pulling, if you're doing research and want accurate information, Perplexity seems better than ChatGPT. For me, ChatGPT is great as that virtual assistant role. Like, I give it data and tell it to do things with it that it kind of excels at. So they're all, I don't know, they're all different. Anyway.
Yeah, I need to, I'm interested in GitHub Copilot as a coder, but I also recognize that I need to find a new job in about 10 years, I think.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, yes. Maybe. I don't see.
Hopefully, I'll be retired.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. Yeah. For people like you and me. Maybe. I don't know how I can retire. Like, that's a whole other question. But anyway, that's my problem to solve. I don't see chat. Somebody posted on the thing, you know, Lawyer Jeff posted on that thread. And he said something about, you know, I don't see a world where AI, at least in its current implementation, would replace lawyers. However, lawyers using AI are going to replace lawyers that don't. Right. And I think that's where it's moving to. And I think programmers are absolutely the same way. Like, you are going to become more efficient using AI. But right now, a lot of companies are still banning the use of any LLMs specifically for their programming teams, which I understand. Like, you don't want to create a scenario where you're sharing your company's intellectual property with the LLM just for the sake of, right. I get that, but you can't, like, you need to solve that problem and be able to still use these LLMs. Like, that is the thing. And the companies that figure that out are going to get ahead of the companies that don't. So,
well, I mean, the solution is you build your own in-house and you have it on your own servers and you do your own thing. That's what you do. And it sucks in your code base and is fine tuned to your environment and your business. And yeah, I mean, that's the answer.
That's the answer. And not only is that more secure and maintains privacy, it's better because it's using your stuff. It knows you. Yeah. So, yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. But, I get what you're saying there. Here's the reality though, is like, what I see is how fast it's going. So it's easy to say, like, it's not going to replace that in the short term. And I 100% agree with that. Like, right now, like, that the key phrase in what you just said was in its current form.
Yes.
But it
That's
is
why
evolving.
I use that phrase. Yes.
Evolving is the right word so rapidly that I honestly think it's not out of the realm of possibility. And I know this sounds crazy and I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theory or anything like that, but it is entirely possible that we as humans are creating the next generation of silicone-based life form that will be the dominant life form on the planet X number of years from now. You can debate on how many X number of years, but it might be an eventuality.
It might be.
Because they'd be adapted to survive a lot of the other junk that we've done to our planet, too. So, like,
that's fair. Yeah.
Good luck.
Well, but like, there's, I agree that we are creating something, right? You know, an intelligence, a life form, a something, right? Like, however, that doesn't necessarily mean that we humans become deprioritized. We could create a world where, yes, there is this dominant thing in terms of productivity and like grunt work, the intellectual stuff, like coding. At some level, coding is grunt work, right? Right. You know, and at some level, all the things we do are grunt work. Now, it's skilled grunt work for sure. Like, you know, I don't mean to be dismissive. I'm a coder too. I'm not a very good one. But if we do it right, we create a world where all the grunt work is done by the robots that are great at grunt work. And then we get more time back for ourselves to enjoy what we like to do, to create art. And there will be some art that AI can create, and we can debate whether we should call that art or not. And I'm fine having that debate. I'm a musician, all that stuff. But there will be things that I create that are mine. And that's an amazing thing for me. Even if I don't share it with anyone, the ability to sit and create things that, like, art, and the art could be software, the art could be music, the art could be paintings. It's like all of that stuff. So freeing us up from the grunt work to do the things that we want to do as opposed to the things we have to do, that to me is the sort of, that's why I'm optimistic about this. And I realize I default to optimism about things, and yes, I don't mean to be dismissive about, well, that's one path, Dave, but there's another one. Like, yes, right. I know, I'm aware. I just choose to focus on the one that I like, because I don't know, it's easier to sleep at night most of the time.
Oh, I mean, here's the reality is what I'm talking about is a timeline that, like, I'm not going to have to worry about it because I'm not going to be here when whatever either of those paths probably end up happening for reality.
Maybe.
I don't think. Maybe it'll happen faster.
I don't know how fast it's maybe. Happening. Yeah.
Well, that's part of the scary part of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's funny because I can't remember where I heard it. It was like on a podcast or something like that. There was a kind of a short story that played out your scenario of it, which was basically, it was about everything has evolved and now everybody on the planet except like one guy lives a life of leisure, and then there's the one guy that has to go around and fix like the robots and things that break down that when they can't fix themselves.
He's the most important human.
It's not a very big job. There's not like a lot to do, but he has the one human with a job, and everybody else is just like off having fun and creating art and going on vacations and
bacchanalia.
You know,
exactly.
That'd be great. I hope your vision of that is the correct one, because maybe that would be great. I don't know.
We get bored doing a job. We as humans get to like guide this, which is why I like to share that vision. And it's not mine. I mean, other people came up with it. I just like it. But like we get to guide this thing. We're the ones creating it, not you and me, but you know, we. So why wouldn't we all want that? There's a world where that, you know, I don't know. I know.
I'm starting to use it more in my coding, and it's definitely helping me. I was running through a problem just this morning, and it's just like, I was having some trouble understanding some bitwise operators, and I was like, well, let me just ask ChatGPT to unfurl this for me. And then it's like, oh, okay, that's how it works. So it was great for my learning too. I actually learned something from the AI, because I was having trouble just from reading it like understanding what this bitwise function was doing from a piece of code that I was reading. It's like, explain this to me. It's like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Yes. That is one of my most valuable uses of AI today, is explain this to me, because it can, and even I will often say, look, here's three websites or here's a PDF about this thing. You synthesized all of this down into, you know, a three paragraph or one paragraph digestible chunk. And that is where it's valuable. And look, I get that these AIs were trained on data that they did not have permission to obtain. That's just how it be. I have two thoughts on that. Number one, Pandora's box ain't going to close. Number two, right or wrong, and there are some wrongs. I think it's right and wrong, right? What was done to create these. But number two, I am one of the humans who has put more out on the internet than most. And so my data was used more than most of us to train these AIs. And they didn't get my permission. They didn't pay me. You're the same way, Adam. You did a podcast for 20 years. That, you know, they slurped all that stuff in and they didn't pay us for that. So, and they're not going to, right? You know, so I could spend my time trying to get them to pay me. And there's a world where I might have success, but I think it's a very slim chance. Or I can choose to just reap the rewards of the work I put into this AI and just use it. And so I've chosen plan B. You know, what can I say?
Also, because how much time do you want to spend figuring out who are they?
Yeah,
define they in this scenario.
Yeah, well, the problem is they is
everybody.
Right. Yes. Yeah. We have a class action suit of all of humanity against some nebulous thing. Yeah. So, yep. Yeah. Better to just lean in. I don't know. My choice. I don't want to say it's better or worse. For me, it's better to just lean into the positive than obsess about the negative. Because you folks get the positive version of Dave. There is that the obsession that I have about things can go dark and it can drag me into it. And it's happened, you know, more times than I'd like to count, sometimes for years at a time. And I just play the role of Happy Dave. I'm actually in Happy Dave for all these days, which is great. But, you know, I can obsess about stuff and I have to be careful what I choose to obsess about. So, yupper. Anyway.
That was a good conversation.
AI like therapy today. It's good. You can use AI for therapy. Just don't, you know, just be as with every piece of information you get from it, evaluate it on your own. Yeah. So thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Yeah, fun. That was a little bonus segment, if you will. And now the band. Speaking of things I created that are out on the internet. More songs. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks to Unite or to BZG Apps for doing our giveaway this month for Unite 6. MacGeekab.com/giveaway. You still got another week or so to get in on winning one of five free copies of Unite 6. I am using it right now. In fact, reading the agenda as we are wrapping up the show. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Check out Adam's debut film podcast. Check out my Business Brain and Gig Gab. And of course, check out Pete's So There I Was. All that stuff is linked in the show notes, as is a link to review the show. MacGeekGab.com/review is where you can go to review the show. And we love that too. That's yet another way to kind of just help keep sharing the Mac Geek Gab love. Share Mac Geek Gab with a friend, please. That's really the best way to share the show. Is to share the show. Share it on social media. Share it with a friend via text message. Let us know your favorite way to share it. You got anything to share with them, speaking of, Adam?
I would share, like we heard a lot of in this episode, go out there and don't get caught.
Made up.
later.